Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:18 on the 1st of February. With us today, we have Representative Hughes, Representative Culver, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones, and we've been joined by Representative Ledoux. We have one item on the calendar today, House Bill 94, Alaska Securities Act. The members have a in their packet have a draft proposed blank CS and a corresponding memo. This summer, legal services took a look at the bill and began reviewing for any technical changes. I expect that we will have further changes to the blank CS before it's presented to the committee. At this time, we will not be taking up the CS. With us, we have Kevin Anselm from the Division of Banking Securities to present the bill. Welcome back again, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Kevin Anselm. I'm the Division Director for the Division of Banking and Securities with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And good afternoon to all of you. I'm pleased to talk with you today about updating Alaska's Securities Act. There are some supplemental documents, and then I wanted to make sure that you knew that I wasn't going to go through those supplemental documents. But I did want to point out that there's a couple of things to make this a little easier. There's a table of contents. It doesn't have the pink note on it that I have, but it's just a few pages, and this really will give you a guide to the entire bill and also the substantive changes. There's also a draft of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act Corporation proxy solicitations. This is the part of the current Securities Act that will stay right where it is in 4555. Today we'll be talking about 4556.
When we do get the CS, we are going to need you to walk through the sectional at that point in time.
I'm happy to do that. I can do it today as well, but I thought I'd give you an overview so that, you knew sort of what we were all getting into. There's also a securities enforcement comparison that we'll talk about, and it's in colors, and we'll talk about the difference between civil penalties under the current law and under the proposed act.
Representative Ledoux.
You just used the phrase when we do get the CS. So there's a different CS than the work draft of 10-8-15?
Right. We're not adopting the CS. It's undergoing additional changes.
Thank you.
You missed that part.
Sorry.
Please continue.
Thank you. So the first reasonable question is why update the Securities Act? We want to recognize and incorporate current industry terms and standards. Frankly, this act has not been substantially updated since 1999, and that was related on some federal Securities Act that were updated in 1996. There have been a few changes, but not many. We'd like to synthesize with other states' laws to make it easier for businesses, entrepreneurs, and investors to understand their rights, their responsibilities, and their opportunities here in Alaska. We'd like to consider opening equity crowdfunding opportunities to Alaskans. And I know that there's another bill pending at the same time that Senator Costello has offered that would also open equity crowdfunding. We want to deter investment scams using Alaska entities or harming Alaskans. And I'm sorry to tell you, we have a lot of that going on. And the summary in the enforcement cases will tell you more about that. We also want to enhance penalties against those who harm older Alaskans. And it makes sense to separate the security statutes from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act statutes to reduce confusion and improve understanding for both acts. So what does the revised Alaska Securities Act do? Well, actually, what does it do now? It provides the legal framework for offering or selling securities within Alaska or to Alaskans, including requirements for registration of various types of securities. It requires a business plan and other disclosures to potential or current investors and exemption from certain registration requirements. It also requires Alaska state registration of the sales force, those people who sell securities to Alaskans, and, of course, enforcement. So the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act provisions that would remain in 4555 include references to exempt ANCSA securities transactions that are currently at 4555-210, and, of course, enforcement and administration of the chapter. But it takes out everything else that is rather confusing, both to the ANCSA corporations, their shareholders, and others who work with that chapter.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Josephs.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Anselm, why is it confusing to ANCSA shareholders?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, because the current act talks about stocks, bonds, and various kinds of securities that really have no relevance to the Alaska claims issues.
Got it.
And so when it comes to enforcement or anything like that, it is very confusing.
Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
So is the only thing remaining in ANCSA would be the proxy stuff?
No, actually, there's more than that. There is a draft of what it would look like in your packet, and it goes through what misleading filings includes, what reports of corporations must be made, how the chapter will be administered, what the administrator's authorities are, and so it has been modified to fit only the ANCSA corporations and not all of the other securities pieces.
Follow.
So I'm trying to get a handle on this, and reading the 100 pages didn't get me very far. If somebody is subject to the Securities and Exchange Commission, are they still subject to Alaska securities law, or is this special for entities that are not subject to the Alaska to the Federal Securities and Exchange Act?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you are actually right in both respects. There are certain federal covered securities and activities that the state has no authority over. And much of that was changed in that act that I mentioned, the 1996. It's the National Market Securities Act. And that took some of the registration of securities responsibilities away from the states, although those broker-dealers that work in the states still must be licensed here. All of the salespeople who sell securities must still be licensed in the state. So there is a dual regulatory system. So you've got the Securities and Exchange Commission. You have a self-regulatory organization called FINRA that looks at the broker-dealers. So you have both investment advisors and broker-dealers. The Securities and Exchange Commission oversees investment advisors that handle accounts of $100 million or more. Anything under $100 million is the state's responsibility. So there is some dual registration, and then there's some separate registrations. For instance, when we talk about crowdfunding intrastate is Alaska only. Crowdfunding nationally, in other words, across state borders, will be under the jurisdiction of the Securities and Exchange Commission, although that's not available quite yet. It'll be available in May. So there is a real bifurcation of the securities regulation between federal and state. I'd be happy to kind of graph that out for you so that you can see what's under state only, shared federal and state, and federal only, if that would be helpful.
I'd appreciate that, because this is a very difficult to understand bill unless you're really nuanced in securities law.
Well, I'm hoping I can make it easier than that for you. And I'm pleased to answer the questions about that. And by the way, ANCSA, those relating to the proxy solicitations, it is specifically Alaska. And that is one of the confusions. And that was set up in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1972.
Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. So you all may want to just take a quick look at the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the draft, what the 4555 will look like with just the ANCSA provisions in it. There are a number of things that the new act will do. Things will be in better order It'll be improved organization. It'll be by topic. It will be easier to understand than the current one. I understand it's very difficult to read. One of the major things we're doing is eliminates filings for all exemptions from registration except rescission offers and crowdfunding. That's a difference from the current act. There are a number of Alaska-only exemptions that small entrepreneurs must file with the state of Alaska. And that has proven to be very difficult. And frankly, we required more information on some of those exemption filings than we required on real registration filings. So there are a couple of other things it does as well. You'll like this. We update our entity and law references. And we won't include that people should notify us by telegram. It's still in there. I can show you where. Another good thing for both entrepreneurs and for citizens is it includes bad actor disqualifiers. What's a bad actor? That's somebody who's been convicted already of doing bad things with securities or with money or has a criminal background related to financial issues. Or for instance, the Securities and Exchange Commission has taken an action against them, they can't come in and work here within the state. Right now, we don't have that kind of a disqualifier.
Representative Ledoux.
Are they forbidden forever, or is there some sort of time frame put on it?
I can double check that, but I think the disqualifier is basically if it has ever happened, then there are certain things they simply cannot do.
Ever.
I think it depends on the level of the crime, but without getting into the law, I won't bother you with that right this second.
All right,
I'll get back with you on that. And of course, one of the primary things we want to do is improve enforcement and investor education provisions. So here's the general overview. Article 1 is the general provisions, and that's on page 1, so this is also a little bit of a table of contents. And this is on slide 7. Exemptions from registration of securities starts also on page 1. And it goes through the rest of the areas, registration of securities and notice filing of federal covered securities. And Representative Ledoux, that will be something that you and I will talk about later. Article 4 is the licensing provisions. This is for the broker-dealers, which are also stock brokerages. It's just a different name for them. Any of their agents, investment advisors, and that's state investment advisors, investment advisor representatives, and federal covered investment advisors. Again, that's that bifurcation between state and federal. Fraud and liabilities, administration and judicial review, and then the miscellaneous and other general provisions. And we'll talk more about that. Sections 2 through 35 basically cover all of the changes that need to be made to the other laws and also covers the ANCSA changes that need to be made in the 4555 statute that remains. So just to give you a little bit of an overview of what's going on in the law, the very first provision in the law is that a person may not offer or sell securities in the state unless the security is a federal covered security, back to our federal-state difference, is registered under this chapter, or the security or the transaction is exempted from registration. Usually, we'll see that the same registration and transactional exemptions as are the same as in the current act. So we're not making a lot of changes. That's something that the crosswalk will assist with as we're working through this law. And I'm just going to show you a page. The way it's set up, as if you're looking for something related to the new law is on the left-hand side of the paper. What it changes in the current law is in the center, And then there are comments about any changes that are made. You're going to see as you flip through here that many say it's exactly the same. Others say that it updates terminology, and we'll give you the specifics to that and also relate to any of the law provisions that might be in federal law or somewhere else so that it's easy to track. Article 2 and slide 9. Also includes the same registration and transactional exemptions as the current act, but adds one more, and that's crowdfunding. It's called a small intrastate securities offering. This is really for the entrepreneurs here in Alaska, of which we have many. Right now, crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, is not allowed, and I'll call it equity or debt crowdfunding. It means that someone wants to invest in a business that where they expect to get a profit back, or they expect to share in the earnings. And there are a number of provisions that are just Alaska-centric. And these are all outlined on slide 10. The issuer has to be an Alaska business. Purchasers must be Alaska residents, and issuers must have some evidence proving residency. One of the things that differs from other sorts of crowdsourcing that you may have heard of, like Kickstarter, open source, those typically, if there's any return at all for the contribution that an investor gives, it's going to be like a t-shirt or a video or something that comes out of giving to that entrepreneur. You know, many of these entrepreneurs have great ideas, and so they're building prototypes, et cetera, and they need some help getting them off the ground. So it's basically a contribution to the business. Under crowdfunding, either equity or debt, here in the state of Alaska, under these provisions, an investor, also Alaskan, can help the entrepreneur and also expect to make a little profit from it.
For example, do.
So without this change in the law, if somebody had a good idea, like I remember when I lived in Kodiak, and there was a group of people who were trying to start a brewery in Kodiak, and they went around to people that they in the community that they thought might be willing to invest in that. Was that covered under the Alaska Securities law, or was that exempt from the Alaska Securities law, or I just don't know.
Well, I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, if the brewers were asking for contributions and those people that were giving them the contributions did not expect a return, then it would not have been a security. So then it would not have fallen under our act. However, if these were friends and family, and if there was no general solicitation made, they just talked to people that they knew, and they gave the appropriate disclosures, then they were able to bring in up to 25 people, depending on how it was structured, and just file an exemption, which was a one-page piece of paper that would also include some information about the business. Those are the exemption filings that I'm talking about that we're now eliminating. So it may well have fell under the law. It may not have.
So, follow up. So you're eliminating those exemptions. So is that going to be making it harder for people like that?
No, we're eliminating the filing so that people that do a friends and family sort of exemption, they don't have to file or pay any fees to the state.
Thank you.
Welcome. There's a couple of other items relating to crowdfunding. No commissions can be paid in connection with the sale of those securities unless the salespeople are licensed in Alaska, and we can license them here. There's a notice filing required either 10 days before general solicitation or within 15 days of the first sale if no general solicitation. There is a notice filing that needs to be made with the division. And it will include information on the issuer, control persons, salespersons, and the bank where the funds will be deposited. And the issuer, and this is really important because it also tracks federal law, is that these crowdfunded securities are not able to be resold unless they're either exempt under the law, under one of the provisions, or if they are registered in some way, whatever the law would require. So in essence, these crowdfunded securities are illiquid. There's really not an exchange for them at this point.
Pardon me, Representative Ledoux.
So how does this affect actually buying into a business? I mean, let's say that somebody has a business and they need to raise, let's say, 500,000, let's make it an even million. And so they're trying to find investors, each of those investors to contribute, let's say, $100,000. And then they'd own one-tenth of the business. Mm-hmm. Does that fall under this?
It could if they plan to do any sort of general solicitation. If they're doing a friends and family sort of exemption, then they would not need to use crowdfunding.
Okay, but
follow up.
Okay, so they're doing a friends and family. Can somebody sell then their one-tenth of the business?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, only if that security is otherwise exempt or registered. Many times what people want to do when they start up a business is they want to grow that business and be able to sell out so that they can do another business. And so a security is a lot like a house title. It needs to be done right. Property title, it needs to have all of the proper things done, or there's a cloud on the title. And it's the same with securities. And so it's important that whether a person is doing an in-state exemption or they're doing something federally, that they keep that title clean so that if, a Google wants to swoop in and buy them out, or some, you know, they're going to hit the jackpot with whomever buys their company, that title is clear. We have had some situations in the state where people did not follow the law, and then when they went to sell the business, that's when they figured out that they had a problem. And so what that means then is you have to go back and unwind the transaction and set it up right, and it takes a little bit of time, sometimes an attorney, to get that straightened out so that then they can sell their business and go on, or they can refinance their business and go on. And that's one of the messages we have for entrepreneurs in our outreach events is, you know, talk to us. We can't give legal advice, but we can point you to areas that you'll want to talk with your own attorney about.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Josephson.
I have a couple sort of housekeeping-related questions.
Oh, sir, I just brought them together.
Okay. The first is, you held up a sheet and said some view this as not a significant change, some view it as a change. It was a spreadsheet. Have you provided that? Is that something that we have?
This one? The one in the pretty colors?
Well, it didn't look like that to me when you held it up. But you mentioned it about 15 minutes ago.
This one?
Yeah, that one. We must have it because you have it.
Okay. Oh, that's the crosswalk.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've given us that.
Yes.
All right. And my second question is,
yes.
Last year we had... You presented a bill related to securities that was designed, I thought it was also related to exemptions.
It was.
What was that bill?
That bill took away the filings for the 10 and 25 friends and family.
All right, and did that? What happened to that bill?
It passed.
Okay.
And but there are some other, and I think it was, I want to say 30... but that... I may be getting it mixed up with this one, so I can get that number for you.
Okay, thanks.
This is the next step and takes care of the rest of the exemptions that still require filings. We've also gotten rid of a couple of filings that were required by regulation. So I've gone through most of the provisions for the intrastate equity or debt crowdfunding, and I'm happy to discuss those further. As far as licensing provisions, Most of the licensing provisions stay the same as they are right now. They're just much easier to read and easier for the industry to find. There is a new registration exemption for mergers and acquisition brokers, and that is to help promote business in the state. Business and acquisition brokers do kind of what we were just talking about a moment ago with small companies that are looking to grow and sell or grow and merge. Most of those transactions are, well, I will tell you that they are lawyered up on both sides, and there's really not a reason for the state to be involved with licensing those brokers so long as they don't otherwise receive a commission relating to anything other than the sale of the business. So that's one thing that we thought we didn't need to get into. There's also a new registration exemption for snowbirds, and that allows people who have more than one residence, if they're working with a stockbroker already in their principal where their principal residence is, whether it's here or whether it's another state, if the state that they're in also has the same snowbird exemption, then the brokers don't have to be registered in both places. They only have to be registered in the principal resident, the principal residence of that investor. Again, trying to make it a little easier for the industry.
Representative Ledoux.
So at this point, without this, if somebody was a snowbird living in Arizona and he came up here, and then they called their stockbroker and they wanted to make some sort of stock purchase, that broker would have to be licensed here also?
Or through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Yes, under current law, unless there's another exemption for them. There are also some de minimis exemptions. But in essence, you're correct. And by the way, Arizona is one of the ones that doesn't have the reciprocal snowbird. We were checking on that because, well, you know, we all know people that have those second residences down there.
Paula?
Why does it have to be reciprocal?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Again, we're talking about state and federal, and the state has jurisdiction over the salespeople in the states. The Securities and Exchange Commission does not oversee salespersons. They oversee the firms.
No, but follow up. But my question is, okay, so Arizona doesn't have something. Why couldn't we have something which would include Arizona, even if Arizona didn't grant reciprocity?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, sort of we do. We have those de minimis exemptions. So perhaps there are only, you know, two or three transactions. I mean, there's a certain number, there's a threshold. So, and if the broker-dealer is registered, whether or not the salesperson's registered may be informative in our example here.
Thanks.
And moving to slide 12, talks generally about administration of the new Securities Act. We're making investment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still on the last slide in the snowboard question. Are you in the development of the bill? Did you refer to the
Uniform Security
Uniform.
Act?
Yeah. So are you reviewing things, trying to get things across state lines? And then back to Gabrielle's question about, a follow-up, I guess, because she responded. Uniform Law Commission is what I was thinking. But the snowboard thing, you're giving a blanket exemption if the other state has it. I mean, you talked about these other exemptions that might apply, but I guess I'm not sure why you couldn't grant it here in Alaska, even if Arizona wasn't granting it, so that the person that, say someone's lived here in Alaska all their lives, but now they're starting to, in Arizona, be 7 months and only 5 months in Alaska. So now Arizona becomes a principal residence. And they're, couldn't we in Alaska, if they're making purchases while they're here, buy the salesperson in Arizona, give that break? I mean, is there some reason why the other state has to do it before you give the break, before we give the break? Is there some reason where it's riskier or a problem? I just don't understand why both states have to do it in order to get this full exemption.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we can certainly look at that. There are a number of other provisions that would still need to apply. For instance, if that broker, you know, did something wrong, we'd want to make sure that one or both states could take some sort of action related to that, and that there wouldn't be any problem with the rights that the investor would have. But we could certainly look at that, and I can report back to see how that would work. But this is one of the Uniform Securities Act provisions, and we thought that made sense here in Alaska, at least on this side of the transaction.
Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I just wanted to state that was exactly where I was going. Thank you for articulating that.
Humbling. And I will come back with information related to that for you and give you some actual examples of what would happen under the Uniform Act, what happens right now, and then we can look at what else you might want to have happen.
And actually, if you get it to Conrad, he can get it out to everybody immediately. And then if you want to meet with Representative Ledoux, everybody else will have it too, and we won't have to reinvent the wheel.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll do that. Thank you. And I know that there are a couple of staff listening now that are probably already drafting out what those examples would look like. So I'll try to get those to you as quickly as I can.
And we have two of them online. If you need them, just feel free to ask. And they're both online right now, Christy Baylor and Renee Wardlow.
Great. Thank you.
Are those the two you were thinking of?
Pardon? Yes, absolutely. All right. Back to Article 6 and investor education. Under the new act, the division would be permitted to develop and implement investor education initiatives through collaboration, and that means the ability to also accept grants or donations for that specific purpose. I can tell you that right now the division is able to go after grants, and we've done that with the Investor Protection Trust and have done a number of outreach events, including K2KTOO programs regarding investor education and other financial education and outreach programs. You may have seen them. They run pretty often. Thousands of Alaskans have had the opportunity to view them, and we're hoping to be able to continue that. But I also know that the Investor Protection Trust is about to run out of money.
Actually, you had one that was aimed at senior investors, I believe, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. We've had several of those as well.
I've seen several of them.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Somebody's watching.
Somebody's watching. Understood. One of the newer initiatives would be to set up an investor education fund. And this would be using one-third of the money received in civil penalties that would be deposited into the fund. But it is not a designated fund. We've been very careful and worked with Department of Law to point out that the legislature gets to appropriate those funds for investor education and training, or it might use those funds for something else during certain times, of which I can't imagine we would have any. And then the last piece in administration that changes is variable annuity transactions with investors. And those would be subject to the applicable provisions of the Securities Act, and that basically would be sales practices. I will tell you that we have heard from the American Life ACLI, excuse me, American Conference of Life Insurers, I believe, and they are a little concerned about some of the language here, and so we're working with them to see if we can come to an agreement. As far as enforcement, most of the basic provisions are carried over, as mentioned on slide 13. However, it's been reorganized and expanded from current law. Those significant changes includes increasing civil penalties up to $100,000 per violation with no maximum limit per case. In other words, per violation, there could be a number of violations, and unfortunately, we've had multiple cases with multiple violations that are pretty severe in the state, and those will be what I share with you on the colored spreadsheet. Also would allow treble damages when a victim is an older Alaskan. In other words, any Alaskan over the age of 60. And that term is already defined in law.
Representative Ledoux.
When you say civil penalties increase to $100,000 per violation with no maximum limit per case, do you mean a single violation could cost more than $100,000, or you mean no maximum limit on the number of times that somebody can be charged?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it means per violation with no maximum limit per case. So, for instance, a case that we have right now where a number of Alaskan investors were, they had a lot of money taken from them in an oil and gas scam, and they lost about $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
The maximum we can charge right now for all violations in that case for a civil penalty is $25,000. And they took over $3 million from our investors here and over $4 million from other investors.
Representative Ledoux?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out. So there's one case involving five counts, for example. So each count of that case, you could get $100,000?
It's possible, yes.
Okay, but if it just involves one particular instance against one particular person, then the maximum is $100,000. Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, you are correct.
All right, thank you.
Could I ask something about that?
Certainly.
I always wonder in these situations, Ms. Ansem, how would the bill educate or be a deterrent? How would people selling securities, would you write them every 6 months and say these are the new penalties?
Through the
what chair, what makes us think that this would deter bad conduct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, because it would no longer be a cost of doing business. There are firms that will do bad deeds up here, and their maximum exposure is $25,000. It doesn't matter how many millions they take. Should I be pointing at that one? Okay. Or speak up? I can do that.
Carry on.
Okay. That helps. Thanks.
All right. Another change to the current law would be that we could order restitution from the division. Right now, we can't order someone who takes someone else's money to give it back. And so that would be something that would be helpful. And then there's a provision in the new law that the Superior Court can hold a person in violation of a final administrative order in civil contempt, and that would subject them to a potential fine as well. We do have a lot of difficulties collecting on some of those civil penalties that are the maximum, $25,000, and then if they don't pay, we do go after them in court. And again, unfortunately, some of these businesses consider it's a cost of doing business, and will Alaska really come after them? It costs a lot of money to go after $25,000.
Well, on that topic, on the restitution, which can't currently be ordered by the administrator, does the bill speak to an escrow process where there's a dispute? Or, I mean, I assume right now that the way that someone is made whole is they sue. And so the individual tries to collect restitution, unaided by the government. And so I'm just wondering, how exactly would that work under the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there's a civil process, well, or an administrative process, mm-hmm. so that if someone doesn't agree with something that is ordered, unless it's on a consent basis, then it goes to the Office of Administrative Hearings mm-hmm. to start, and then it can go on up through the court system. So there is absolutely an opportunity to not agree.
Okay.
But there's also then the opportunity for us to work with someone to come to a consent agreement.
Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
The restitution can be more than the fine, right? The restitution can be the amount that the person has lost?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Joseph, do you have another question?
Nope.
And there have been a few changes to the civil enforcement proposed as well. And it just, they're listed out here, and we can, of course, go into the specifics of those. There can be injunctions, asset freezes, and receivership. And again, this is primarily through the courts. Additional penalties where the victim's an older Alaskan, as we discussed, treble damages. Order of rescission or disgorgement, restitution, and then also payment of pre-judgment or post-judgment interest. And that's on the civil side. Talking administrative is what we were just talking about. This is civil. And then there were some changes on the criminal side as well. In the civil liability area, that has been separated out from rescission. Rescission is where someone buys or sells a stock or bond, and they ended up with it inappropriately. In other words, that sale or buy should be rescinded. And that means that everyone just goes back to where they were before the transaction. And then there's usually a little bit of interest charged. And there's a couple of other times where salespeople who violate the act are liable to their clients, and then those clients can recover damages. Generally, the statute of limitations on any of these sorts of activities are 3 years from the date of sale, unless there's fraud, and then it's extended. So,
recently in Anchorage, we had $3 million that was taken from either an elderly couple or one person. Are you familiar with the what I'm talking about?
It was a federal case, yes.
How much would they have got under the changes that you have right now, or that you're proposing in the legislation?
I don't know, but I will get the information from that case and come back with you.
It might be something that we can all relate to when we when we see it. Thanks.
That's a good question. Thank you. So rescission offers, that's generally the same with a couple of new things, and I'll tell you why they're new. First, if someone's going to buy back the stock that they sold to someone inappropriately, the aggrieved party has 30 days to accept the rescission offer so that it doesn't continue to drag out. We have to make a decision here. The offeror must demonstrate ability to pay. Right now, that's not required, and so if someone says that they'll pay back this investor, we've believed them to both ours and the investor's detriment. We couldn't require them showing an ability to repay. So we've had somebody skip town on that one, and we'll talk about it when we go through the enforcement cases. And again, not only do they have to demonstrate the ability to pay, they have to actually pay it. So criminal enforcement, it's pretty similar to what is in place now, except for the fines. And the knowing violations would be considered a Class C felony. And if somebody violates the securities law and there's a criminal prosecution, it's considered a Class A misdemeanor. So we've come to the end of a real broad summary of the things that have changed in the law. I didn't give you 109 pages of verbiage, I hope. But I'm very pleased to answer questions or to move on to some of the other documents, if you'd prefer.
How long do you think it's going to take to get the CS finalized, or the revisions to the CS?
I understand. I just saw that today, so we will get on that as quickly as we can.
Are there going to be material changes, I guess, is my next question. There must be if we're...
Material changes from us on the CS?
Yeah.
I don't believe that any changes from us will be material, but I understand that there's another version that I just understood today of a W version.
What I'm wondering is if we have potential for another 109-page bill, if it might be best until we have it in front of us before we go into one version and then have to go through the whole exercise again.
I understand. If I may, if I can take a look at what I think the work will be in front of us, because we've got, you know, all of the materials prepared for this version, we'll just modify them. I expect it won't take very long, and I expect that if I have a chance to look at them, I could get a message to you or to Conrad tomorrow.
Oh, certainly.
Would that be all right?
Then I wonder if we ought to just take this up when we have everything in front of us, and I think we could probably move a lot.
Okay.
Pastor, Representative Ledoux, followed by Representative Joseph.
I just have one question. If it's going to be, if this phrase is going to be in the new CS, this is under the old CS, the version W, and it's section 4546.310. And we're on page 33, or rather, not 33, 34.
Oh, thank you.
And...
Of version W?
Yes.
Okay.
Section 12, or subparagraph 12. Mm-hmm. And where it talks about that you have to describe any pending litigation or any proceeding, contemplated proceeding, that you knew was contemplated by the government authorities. And so I was wondering why that's just limited to contemplated by government authorities rather than litigation that you know is contemplated by anybody. I mean, so for example, if you've gotten a demand letter from an attorney for a private party that says that, you know, this is a settlement offer with respect to this controversy that we're having, and if we don't settle this case within X days, then we're going to be filing litigation against you. Why wouldn't that need to be disclosed? Why is it only litigation contemplated by a government authority? And as I was making my way through this really complex bill, that popped out at me.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm not sure, I haven't seen W until just a few moments before I walked into the room, so forgive me. Typically, any proceeding would, to me, bring in exactly what you're talking about, but without reading how the context in the bill runs, I won't be able to say.
Follow up?
Certainly.
Okay.
Same language.
Okay.
It looks like it's any pending litigation action or proceeding, and that would seem to me to be a formal litigation action or proceeding as opposed to simply a discussion.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I understand what you're saying, and that may be something that we need to look at either defining in reg or expanding. And it may make more sense to put it into reg as far as what is a proceeding. So thank you. That's a very astute observation.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson. Anybody have any generic questions over the concept that's in front of us at this point in time? Seeing none, we're obviously going to hold it over, and with that, we will adjourn at 10 minutes.
Actually, I apologize. I remember what I was going to ask. I'm sorry. I remember what I was going to ask, and I think it's interesting. You may not. May I, real fast?
Certainly, yeah.
Where is it that you got your ideas for this bill? What is this? Is this from a model act? Is it from attending a national conference and seeing how archaic our act is? I'm just curious where all the ideas come from.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, a number of places. We wanted to look at the model act because a number of states have adopted that model act. We wanted to be easier on entrepreneurs and businesses while still protecting the public. We have taken some of the ideas from the North American Securities Administrators Association, including protection, more protection for seniors. You're seeing a lot of that in the news, and so that's something that we haven't done here yet, and we really need to. Also, a lot of it is the experience that we're having, particularly with enforcement, and the fact that we are unable to really detour some of the activities that are happening both in our state and outside. One of the issues that we can talk about more is, for instance, anybody that uses a shell company that's formed up here in Alaska and uses it to rip off people somewhere else. They use a P.O. box up here in Juneau and set up limited partnerships elsewhere and convince people to invest money in them. Many securities acts would not allow that sort, or allow the state where the securities activity didn't happen to take any action. But because they have the entity incorporated or set up here in Alaska, we have that ability now. We wanted to maintain it. So there are things that we took from the current Alaska Act that are very Alaska-centric that other states don't have, as well as the benefits from the Model Act and some things that we've learned along the way.
Thank you. Sorry.
Any further questions? One comment on my part. 109-page bill is, you know, fairly hefty, but I've never seen one that big without a fiscal note, or with a zero fiscal note.
They write the fiscal notes too.
Well, I know. but I might add that we also have had a 109-page insurance rewrite that was coming our way that I think is now down to 30, 35 pages and still coming. So, I mean, if we wait long enough on that one will have nothing left but the title. Maybe on yours, if we wait a while, it will shrink as well. But
I'm sorry to say.
I'm glad we're doing it. I think it's long overdue, and the same thing on the insurance bill. It's long overdue, but...
If people have some questions on this, please don't hesitate to get those to us, and I'm happy to address them in any form that you'd like. I know that security sometimes seems like it's arcane and really different than things that we deal with every day, but it's really not. We all have mutual funds. We have pension plans, et cetera, and all of this really applies. And so if there are some examples that you'd like me to look at using or what ifs, I'd be happy to make that a little easier for everyone. But just know, you know, securities is kind of like a bank account.
I might add I'm lawyered up, too, and I expect my two attorneys to ask as many questions as they feel are necessary, although I think you're getting it after the bill moves out, aren't you? It's going to judiciary, so you get two bites at the apple.
And I think it goes to finance after that.
Yeah. But anyway, thank you again. Any further questions? And with that, we will hold the bill over, and we'll adjourn at 4:15.